right, not too bad, Jeremy. 2 weeks from our last podcast instead of like 4 weeks. Is that right? 2 weeks?
I don't know, man. These days are running together. I know that I saw you at the stadium.
Yeah.
I know I haven't seen you on Sports Extra on Sunday last 2 weeks.
I was in New York visiting J.J. Watt as he made his debut on the set of the NFL Today. So we went to New York on Thursday, did the interview with J.J. in the morning on Friday, and then they did their rehearsals at 2:30 that afternoon. And then I was back on a plane in the morning to come return to Houston on Saturday. I had a story at 7 a.m. news on Sunday, another one at 10 p.m. on Sunday, and then another portion of my interview Sunday night on Sports Extra this past Sunday. If you want to see the entire thing, it's on KHOU 11 Plus, our streaming channel for free on Roku and Fire TV, and I think it's also on YouTube. So, yeah, I didn't mean to butt in, but yeah, that's what I was doing.
No, look, good for JJ. You know, I mean, it's an interesting time. Anytime somebody tries to transition, he's obviously transformed Houston in lots of different ways. That impact is probably permanent, right, on the city. And no, I mean, you know, it's good you got to get to do that. You're on a little bit of a run, I would say, with some of these interviews that you've had.
Yeah, I had James Harden after his comments in China. Simone Biles, and then obviously this exclusive, it was an exclusive with James Harden. Talked to Simone Biles a couple of weeks ago, and then this exclusive with JJ. So teamwork, man. It only happens with teamwork. You know, it doesn't happen without it. So David Stearns is the big news on this September 12th. You're rolling your eyes. I don't have you on speaker view, but I'll just give a play-by-play. You're rolling your eyes. David Stearns heading to the Mets. We've talked a lot about David Stearns in the past. What is your initial reaction? I mean, this was expected, right? Like, this was something that seemed to be rumored for some time. It was either going to be the Mets or the Astros.
You know, David Stearns going to the Mets is as much a surprise as saying Houston is hot. You know, I mean, this isn't really a very a difficult thing. 2 years ago, someone you may know well, predicted this, even called the Epler and Stearns dynamic, how that was going to ladder, you know, where that was going to fit, when that was going to happen. And of course, you know, of course, you know, they shut it down right away. Oh, no, it's not going to happen. We have no interest in David Stearns. And, you know, we're all just kind of sitting back like this. You know, because you knew it was a matter of time. I mean, look, it's pretty deep. I mean, Epler and Stearns are friends. You know, I mean, there's other ways to go about this, and I'm not going to blow up because it's not for me to do that. But, you know, Attanasio wasn't real happy. And, you know, Stearns had to go sit out of here. It was like, you go sit in the corner, and then we'll let you see what happens later. You know, David Stearns went to the Mets, and other news, water is wet. You know what I mean? I mean, this isn't really hard to see. And, you know, he inherits the mess. I mean, that's what it is. It's the mess. It is different. It is not running properly. There's certainly opportunities for him to go in there and have some impact. I'm interested to see what happens with the bigger wallet, because, you know, you got guys like Chaim Bloom, and you got guys like, you know, just that type of
Andrew Friedman.
Well, yeah, I'm not so much him, because he's been in LA, and, you know, he's had good players. They haven't gotten over the hump, which has been more about, you know, paralysis by analysis in the postseason, as opposed to the talent they've had on the rosters. But, you know, you look around the league, and some, you know, that small market stuff don't necessarily work with in the big city. You have to be able to make the adjustment or the big paychecks. You know what I mean? The big wallet. So we'll see what happens, but it's about the most least surprising thing I've heard in the last decade is David Stearns becoming a presbyterian operations of the Mets.
Now, Jeremy, making me go back into the Extra Bases archives to pull up to go find those clips about Jeremy mentioning David Stearns and the Mets. And then I've got to insert the little, as we, you know, the little the wheel of tape and the taking a step back into time. So I wonder if this is really the best time for David Stearns. I almost think that because of the failure of the Mets this year with that major, major payroll, I wonder if he's actually stepping into a situation that it's the perfect situation for him, because what is he known for? He's known for doing more with less. And granted, less for the Mets right now is a lot more than what less is for the Brewers, but he never had what you would call an above average payroll in Milwaukee. Looking here, someone crunched the numbers. I think he averaged 87 wins. I think his first two seasons, he had one of the lowest payrolls in baseball when he was there. So in some ways, Jeremy, I actually think this all kind of worked out perfectly for him, because he can come in and save the day after this debacle they've had with those big contracts, and he can do it on a quote unquote budget.
You know, let's talk about David Stearns a little bit. And, you know, I'm a big believer in keeping history, you know, accurate, right? Let's keep it the facts. When David Stearns went over to the Brewers in 2015, they had a very full cupboard, much like Luno inherited in Houston, from the work of Ray Montgomery and some of the other guys that had been there from the scouting department, right? I obviously was leaving Seattle around that time, so I was very much familiar with the Brewers and what they had done, having left there in 2011. You know, Jack Sorensic and Bruce Seid, and then Ray, you know, in that order, built a perennial scouting powerhouse. They just did. And Stearns went in there and he brought in Matt Arnold. And so he had a lot to work with when he got there to help the big league club get over the hump. They made the postseason. They didn't quite get over the hump. And that's, you know, they didn't win any World Series unless they missed the parades. And I'm not running the Brewers down when I say that. I'm just saying that that's the truth of when he got there. The scouting staff from Ray Montgomery is very similar, and the cupboard that was full of prospects is very similar to what happened with Bobby Heck and the Houston Astros, and then Jeff Luno inheriting there. Now, I'm not certainly comparing the two guys, so I'm not comparing the cultures, and I'm not tying those two together. What I am saying is that over time, scouting over there, no matter what they tell you, was marginalized and minimized. That's a fact. I'm just telling you that directly. If you look at the amount of guys
under David Stearns, it was marginalized.
Yep, under David Stearns and under Matt Arnold, it was marginalized. It became much more analytically inclined, which is their choice. But as far as the subjective evaluation, role prediction, and in player development, they went backwards. Now, they were able to have enough guys in the big leagues. And if you remember my thing about GMs and how long it takes to really see what you can do, I said it doesn't take 5 years, it takes seven, right? David Stearns got in there in 2015. His first year as a GM is 16. Yes, he had the offseason in 15, but he's really in 16. 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. That's 7 years. And then he steps aside for 23, goes and sits in a corner as a special assistant, and then goes to the Mets. And really, the Mets have been after him for 24 months, right? So David Stearns, for me, is still very much an enigma. I understand what he does. I understand he's got a good ideas. I'm certainly not saying he's not talented. And I want to say again that I'm not comparing him to Jeff Luno and the culture that was here, although he did work for Jeff Luno before he went to Milwaukee. What I am saying is I got to see the guy do something that's on his own. And in New York, Billy Epler made some pretty good trades to restock the system, you know, and they have drafted well at the top of the draft. They haven't really done a lot with their depth, and that's a fact, and they know it, and they move some guys around to try to have better impact on the depth side of the draft. But Mark Tremuda and Tommy Tanis did a great job at the top of the draft. I thought Drew Toussaint had a good draft this year, you know, in his spot. We'll see what he's able to do. A lot of these players are further away. We'll see how development functions under Billy Epler as the GM, which is really what he's going to be doing, is development scouting. And then we'll find out what David does as the president of baseball ops and how he ties it together to make a winner. Because I'll tell you this, you don't win in New York, that's going to be an issue. I don't care if you're the Mets or the Yankees, you better win.
I will say the Brewers before David Stearns got there had some, I mean, you said the cupboard was full, and it might have been. I'm just looking at the drafts, like 13, Devin Williams was their first pick in the second round. He turned out to be okay.
He's okay.
Taylor Williams, Barrett Aston, Garrett Cooper. 15, I think their first round, 14, the first round draft pick was Cody Medeiros.
Yeah, I remember that.
So they were having some struggles drafting in my opinion, at that time.
Not so much for depth.
Okay.
You know, they had a good job of balancing, and I know those guys' philosophy at the time really well.
The 14 was Medeiros, Jake Gatewood, Monty Harrison, Cy Snead, Troy Stokes. Brandon Woodruff was pretty good, 2014, 11th round pick.
Yes, so in that draft, we're talking about ceiling. Medeiros, big arm, 97. Monty Harrison, jumped through the roof, ceiling. I had those guys way up on my board too, right? Okay. High school players with upside. You had guys in the big leagues that were still performing, and you had a chance to go get some younger kids to restock it that would, in theory, arrive at the time when those other guys got out of their contracts. So, Ray Montgomery for a long time was a GM candidate. For a long time, he was a hot name in it. And while I wasn't in the conversations in Milwaukee with him, I can tell you that not once but twice in this industry was he considered to be a general manager in waiting. And once was in Arizona, that job went to Dave Stewart. And then once was in Milwaukee, and that job went to David Stearns, right? So I feel pretty comfortable saying that the way they drafted, his track record as well has been pretty good. You know, it would be debatable between, you know, the eye of the beholder, I guess, as far as, you know, Bobby and Ray, as far as what they turned out. Bobby, of course, has been very illustrious with multiple organizations. I would say this. I'd say Ray, it wasn't like they walked in empty at all. They didn't walk in empty. There were players in the system, and there were guys that didn't necessarily turn out as well. You know, Corey Ray is another guy who went, I want to say he was in 15, right? Does that sound right? 2015 first round?
The outfielder.
Yeah, and I loved him in high school. We drafted him in high school, and he was the right pick out of Louisville, and it didn't work, right? So, in any event, just it didn't seem to work. And whether it was scouting or development over there, who knows? But what I can tell you is the scouts over there at the time were very, 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 very talented.
Corey Ray was the first-round pick in 2016.
16.
Yeah. Fifth overall selection.
There you go.
Here's something that I wish we had talked about much, much earlier in the season, because it would make one of us look very good. I mean, Jeremy, you look good regardless irregardless. There was something I found very interesting at the beginning of the season. Ethan Salas, catcher, Padres, goes to big league camp, 16 years old, full season baseball. And I'm thinking, wow, this guy, in my opinion, is probably a top 15 prospect just because of where the Padres have him and what he's doing. And, you know, I don't know if it's going to work out, but I got to put him in my top 15 if I had to do it right now. And maybe that's just being overly buying into the hype. MLB.com had him at 86. He's now 17 years old. He's made AA. He's now up to number 5. He plays a premium position. Why were people so low on him at the beginning of the season? I would think just the fact that he was catching big league spring training games at 16, that tells you something. That told me all I needed to know, that this guy has to be one of the top 15, 20 prospects in baseball. That's just my opinion. Or am I being too heavy on my hype?
No, you're right. I think that we do a lot, or people do a lot in this game, of trying to figure out that it all has to be proven before they go ahead and put them on the board, right? Everything's got to be, I know it, it's obvious, I see it. Oh yeah, I love this guy. Well, did you love him before he was that obvious? Because the Padres did. Right. I mean, where were you on that? Right. So I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of indicators that he'd be talented. I don't know that you've seen this fast of a rise for a catcher at that age since Pudge Rodriguez. I think that's probably the most recent one.
I don't know if we've seen a riser like that at any position at that age.
Well, Pudge Rodriguez made the big leagues at 19.
Yeah.
And this guy's on that type of track, certainly as a catcher. For all we know, he's there at 18. If he's in AA at 17, he tears it up. I mean, San Diego ain't exactly, winning the West, right? So there's a couple things they can do over there that might impact, he can maybe impact them. But, the reality is that he's on a very accelerated development track. He's, 17 years old. He plays a premium position, everything you said. And I think that people just want to see it, play out first. Now, I think for me, I would have been with you. I don't know if it would have gone to 5, you know, or 15, but I certainly would have been higher than 86. I think that's a pretty good indicator that he's better than 86 on the list. And, you know, but again, I don't rank him. I don't have a dog in the fight when it comes to that.
I don't either.
Say after the fact. So
do you have any experience with him?
Salas? No. But I've seen enough and talked to those guys whether or not they feel about him. You know, he's down the road really in San Antonio, right?
Yep.
Isn't that where
yep.
they are? Yeah, Robbie Snelling's over there as well, one of our guys. So maybe it's worth the trip to before the season ends to get down there and see him.
Well,
that's next week, right?
The clock's ticking. You better get down there or over there.
I ain't gonna make it.
You're right though. Pudge 91 comes in at 19, and the very next year at the age of 20, he's an all-star.
Yep. So you know, that type of track is pretty rare. Salvador Perez got there pretty fast. I don't remember what age he got there, but he's been there seemingly forever.
Please hold. I'll get it.
Okay.
Please hold. Salvador Perez got there at the age of 21.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, some of these guys get there early. This guy is going to get there really early, and it should be fun to watch.
Also, another, I don't say friend of the program, friend of your program, Cam Collier.
Oh, yeah.
It's been a bit of a struggle at the age of 18 in the Florida State League. 246, 6 homers, 68 runs driven in, OPS of 705, and 106 strikeouts in 111 games. Your level of concern for this 18-year-old and where he is at his stage in the development?
I don't have one. He's 18. Should be a senior year in high school. Instead, he hits 250 in a full season league and has enough, you know, to indicators of strength and to show he's going to be able to play pretty good defense. I have no issue with Cam Collier at 18 years old in A ball.
That's what I figured. Just wanted to, you know, I like to do a little update on the prospects from time to time.
What's Drew Jones doing?
Drew Jones, Diamondbacks, second overall in the 2022 draft. The son, obviously, of Andrew Jones. Drew Jones is 19 years old. He's played for 3 teams this year. Right now, he appears to be, and he's in the California League.
That's low A.
Is it Visalia?
Visalia, I think. Yeah.
Visalia, yeah. He's right now at 238, 2 homers, 12 runs driven in. That's in 29 games.
Where was he before that?
He was in the Arizona Complex League.
Yeah, about right. So there's an example of somebody who's 18 years old, should be a senior in high school, that skipped
now 19.
A year. No, I'm not talking about Drew Jones. Oh, okay. Cam.
Yeah.
Skipped a year, went to junior college, which what it would have been his junior year, because he's already aged up. Would have been his senior year, but he's aged up, right? So he's a young first class in the first place. Plays really well in a junior college, gets stolen by the Reds at, what, 18, I think it was, pick 18, and then goes out in a full season league at what age-wise should be a senior year in high school and goes ahead and does this. I think we're fine. I think we're okay.
Crunching the numbers, and we talked about this on KHO 11 News, Sports Extra. Yes, that's where we talked about it. I crunched the numbers for all of the Astros home records during this golden age or golden era of Houston baseball. Right now, the big thing around Houston is this team is not playing well at home. Other than Dusty Baker's lineups, this is the other talking point, is that this team is not playing well at home. Entering Tuesday night, September 12th action, they were 37-36. That's a .507 winning percentage. So one game over .500. Consider that in 2022, they had a .679 winning percentage, 21, a .630 winning percentage, .741 in 2019. Now, in 2018, they had a .568. They were 46-35. They had 48 wins out of 81 games, so 48-33, .593 winning percentage in 2017. So if they were to finish at one game over .500 for this season, that would put them at 41 wins, right? That's five less than their worst record on my board here. And maybe, yeah, I'll have the graphic up. And think of what five wins right now would do for this team in this race for the American League West, this dogfight with Texas and Seattle. It doesn't sound like a lot, but based on this season and how slim the margins are, margins of error for Houston, think of what those five wins might mean.
Well, it is a lot, because if you have the five games, what's Houston up? A game and a half?
I thought it was two.
Two up? Okay, so they're two up. So if the records are the same in Seattle and Texas have what they have, those five games, just leave them where they are. It doesn't matter who those wins are against, right? Those five games put them up seven games.
Potentially.
That's a big difference, right? Even if you have two of those games, that's a big difference. Four games is different than two. Two games can be eaten up in a day and a half. That's a day and a half of a bad baseball, not playing ball.
And what did you tell me a couple of weeks ago, what you saw? Because we mentioned this on the air, didn't we?
It was a week ago. We talked about it. What I saw is that when these guys are at home, they come out the clubhouse and they are swarmed. They're talking to everybody. There's guys all over the place in front of the dugout. There's people on my home plate. And I got to give these guys credit for being good guys and saying hello to these people and shaking hands. But I saw Jeremy Payne come out the dugout the other day, a couple bats and his glove. A couple bats in his glove, and he was ready to go work, and somebody immediately grabbed him and turned around, hey, can you talk to these guys? And the look on his face was, I'm just trying to go get some work in. Hi, how are you? Good to see you. You know what I mean? But for half a second, if you know what it looks like, you're seeing it. And again, credit to these guys. They'll never say it, and they shouldn't have to say it, because they're good people as a whole. I know some Astros haters don't want to hear that, but these guys in this clubhouse are good people. They're good people, and they want to be part of that stuff. And they're around talking to these guys, to these fans, the best they can. But when they're home, they need to go play. Enough of the distractions. They got to go play baseball. And they're not necessarily getting that, right? Necessarily getting that. So that may have something to do with them being worn down at home and not playing well. Is a little bit of, I don't have time to get settled into my routine. On the road, they know what to expect. People are going to boo them. People are going to chant. They'll throw toy buzzers on the field. You know what I mean? They'll do all kinds of stuff. But they're not going to bother them for autographs and time because they're hated. So all they have to do is just go play baseball and focus, and they lock down. At home, everybody wants a piece of them. And I'll tell the city of Houston, if you want these guys to be as good as they can, back off. I said this before another way. Stop making their life difficult other places. Well, stop making it difficult. Let these guys play baseball. I promise you they'll love you back as much as you love them. They're good guys and they feel it. But, they'll never say this, and I'm certainly not speaking for anybody. That was an observation that I saw. And, a couple guys walked up and said hello to me. I'm not going to get into who. And it was had a few minutes, and I said, go play. Go play. And they said, all right. And they went to go work. So that's where we're at with that. I think that has a lot to do with the effect at home.
Because when you turn on the radio in Houston, there is a lot of discussion about what's wrong with the Astros at home. What's wrong? And, some people think, they get all those, that hate on the road, and it fuels them, and they're angry and they want to win. And rah. I just think it's really interesting, your observation, because I had another member who is within this building who was at a game and said, I think there might be something to what Jeremy's saying, because he saw everything which was going down pregame, all the autographs. I mean, when Jeremy Peña comes out of the entrance onto the field, it's almost like he is the lead singer of a rock band. Women shriek, girls shriek for him. It is crazy. All of these guys, Jose Altuve, I mean, the number of people they have to deal with and the number of autograph seekers and people who want pictures. Listen, I know it's part of the job, and they take that responsibility seriously, but sometimes you got to look around and just say, as this person told me today, maybe enough's enough. Like, can we dial it back a little bit? And again, this is not what they're saying. We haven't heard this. This is just an observation. And when you're trying to figure out what is wrong, Maybe this has something to do with it. Maybe. Now, I'm sure Astros Twitter is going to go off, Jeremy, when I post this on X and
listen,
Twitter.
Post this. The day ends in a Y, Astros Twitter is going to go off about something. Okay? I don't care what it is. Make sure you put that out there. Hi, from me. Day ends in a Y, Astros Twitter is going to lose their mind about something inconsequential. It's just the way it is. They're going to twist something around, and everybody's abusing them, and people are beating up on them. And there's going to be some, I don't know, maybe some radio host out there who's going to decide he's going to go ahead and stoke the fire. You know, we're going to stir it up and make some stuff up and throw that out there because we're Astros Twitter, so we got to knock it off. I don't care. Reality is that's what went down. And I'll say this for you too, Jason. You know, with Jeremy, if you're a brown-skinned person named Jeremy, sometimes they shriek for you. Sometimes they scream. Just saying, comes with the territory, you know. And Jeremy Pena, he understands it. You know, I feel your pain. It is what it is. So just saying, it has happened before. It's kind of a common thread between us brown-skinned Jeremys. There are other ones out there as well. They will tell you the truth. So, you know, outside of that, I'm with you. But, you know, some of that just comes with the territory.
And now that I think about it, they don't get that during the postseason. The people that are on the field, media reporters. Right. And yes, that's another dynamic. But for the most part, those guys, there's a lot of people. I'm not saying that. I mean, there's a lot of people. We've seen it. We've experienced it. We've been through the thick of it. But it's everybody's, for the most part, has something to do. And they're not getting pulled and requests for autographs and this and that. So when they get to the postseason, it might actually help them at home in some way.
But yeah, it's different in the postseason as in the regular season, but you got to get through the postseason, get to the postseason, you got to get through the regular season. So, you know, let's hope they can shake it off last couple of weeks and get into they'll get in.
Yeah.
You know, what they do in the postseason is going to be interesting. I mean, we talked about, unless the Rangers turn it on, they're just mentally beaten. And we talked about them running out of gas in September a couple of times.
Well, they're in second place as of right now.
Seattle went the other direction. They haven't had it, right? I mean, so, you know, some of this stuff has to be built to sustain. But I think it's a lot closer than anybody would have liked.
All right, Jeremy, what's up for you coming up here?
We got Future Star Series had some major steps forward. I'm not going to talk about what they are right now because it's inappropriate to do so. But I will say we're going to prime event season. So got a couple events in Nashville this weekend that are signature style. I'll be back to see you at the ballpark on sunny Monday or Tuesday of next week. Got some meetings next Wednesday in the city of Houston, looking forward to. And then we got to head up to shipping up to that town in the Northeast that the Lakers don't like. I can't even say it because you say it three times and you disappear. So anyway, heading up there and going to, you know, spend some time in the Boston area, working out of there for a little bit. I'll fly
home
back.
Home of?
New Balance?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'll fly back with you for, you know, broadcasting with the postseason. Get started. I'll fly back and make sure I'm around.
Wait, I'm going with you? You said you're going to fly back with me.
Yeah,
fly
to
back
be
to
with
see
you,
me. Yeah.
To be
yeah.
with you here to go to work. So. Because they're going to get in. So that's what's up for me, and looking forward to it.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for another Extra Bases with Bristol and Booth. Make sure, leave your comments, questions, any problems, issues, concerns, leave them. We may react to them, or we may not. Anyways, for Jeremy, I'm Jason. And as always, thanks for listening to another Extra Bases with Bristol and Booth.